Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:02 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is February 16th. I thought I'd kick off here and look at the most actively traded options. And you can see very clearly that you've got Tesla calls at 220, 215, 210, 200, all the way. And then you can really definitely see that people are laddering their maturities, or their strikes. So definitely a lot of action in Tesla trading. And then you can also see the fact that these are the February 17 calls. So they're going to expire tomorrow. So this is a graphic example of just how much volume there is in the 0-day option market. So the fact that people are starting to talk about this now is certainly interesting. But the fact that Tesla put in a downside Q reversal in here today, I think, is also worthy of comment. It opened lower, intraday popped on the upside, and then closed below the low of yesterday. And downside follow through tomorrow would certainly confirm a signal of at least short-term resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. We've had a storming rally since the beginning of this year, and now I think it is reasonable to expect that we're going to have at least some pause and consolidation. So then let's zoom out a little and look at how the NASDAQ is performing. So the NASDAQ is above its 200-day moving average. It has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. But now the big question is, how well is it going to hold this move above the 200-day moving average? And I suspect we're going to find out over the next couple of days. We can definitely see here that the NASDAQ has been losing momentum over the course of February, and having rallied initially in here today, closed on the lower side of the range, of the daily range. And that would suggest that there's at least some scope here for additional weakness. So then you had vocal members of the Federal Reserve out there today talking about they really did think that it would be reasonable to raise rates by 50 basis points. And of course, the bond market responded to that with yields popping on the upside. So the 10-year yield is up now to 3.86%, and it is testing its sequence of lower rally highs. So I think the more important point here, though, is that the size of the reactions is really rather similar. And it has found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on several occasions since the beginning of 2021. So in order to break this trend, it's going to have to sustain a move down and through it. Now, when I look at my positions, well, I've got one in the double line fund, and that's been in positive territory. It has been basically, it's almost exactly hedged against my long in TLT. So that of course is quite peculiar, that you're actually getting the hedge from government bonds off of the credit markets rather than it being the other way around. What we've definitely started to see, though, is something that I've been very wary of for most of the last 6 months. And we saw, for example, that Brookfield has now, let me, I'm sorry, I am having difficulty remembering tickers here. There we go. Brookfield has defaulted on two towers in Los Angeles. So they are now, and it, obviously, let's just put this into some context. This is a $59 billion company, and they defaulted on about $700 million. So even if they have to pay it out of cash, if they were pursued for that, they have plenty of cash with which to pay it. But the reality is that even storied investors would rather default then make good on the ownership or the long-term lease of an office block, because they simply cannot put workers in there. They can't get companies in there. And that's, I think, very telling. Then we can think about Simon Properties. And they are defaulting on a mall in New Jersey. So there's been a significant downtrend underway since 2016, a big rebound during the pandemic, and now it's in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So this is really a big question mark whether it's going to continue to hold here. And then I think it's worth considering WeWork. Now, WeWork was already a defaulting possibility, and then they decided they were going to IPO. Well, the IPO hasn't been particularly profitable. It's still got a market cap of 1.2 billion, but the reality is that they've got nearly 20 billion in debt, and all of that debt matures in 2025. They've only got 460 in cash, and they expect to lose about 2.24 or 224 million in 2023. So then they have a really important decision to make. Are they going to simply go for Chapter 11 and walk away from all their leases? Then recapitalize the company and start fresh and be able to then renegotiate all those leases? Or are they going to go to their debtors, or their creditors, I guess I should say, their creditors, and say, well, unless you give us really favorable terms, we're going to go for bankruptcy? So it could certainly be used as a negotiating tactic. But I think it's particularly relevant then to just look at the example of the offshore drilling companies. So when we think about Noble Group, they relisted in 2021, and since then they've the share has been going up in albeit a choppy manner. It's certainly been advancing, and they were able to. I mean, this is a 100-year-old company that now only has about 2 and a bit years of history, because they defaulted. And all of these companies, and there's a long list of offshore drillers, went bust in 2020. And now they are unencumbered by debt, but they still own all of those drilling rigs. Now, some of them are in cold storage, and it takes a year and probably 100 million to bring each one of those rigs back online. But the reality is that they still have the infrastructure, and they can make the determination whether they want to bring it back online or not. And a lot of the people who were left holding debt in this sector have really been left by the wayside. And they've had to sign workout clauses, and some of those workout clauses are not really very favorable. So it's certainly problematic. But Valaris, for example, is the new name for Rowan Companies. So Rowan Companies defaulted basically in all their debt. So it's not like you can't have restructurings and the entire sector just get along with it. And I suspect that's what we're going to see with the commercial property market. There are lots of companies that own those buildings, and they're simply not going to be able to collect rents on them when there are so many people don't want to go back to the office. Well, what it also suggests is that in order to stabilize the market, they will be prevailing on politicians to force people back to the office, and most particularly government workers. So that's certainly out there on the horizon. Now, when we think about the wider market here, well, oil prices have been a little weaker in here today, and Certainly down off the peak from 4 days ago, but it would really need to sustain a move below $80 in order to question that this isn't support building. Gold prices were relatively unchanged in here today, but the most important point is that if a lot of these commercial property owners or the lessors decide that they're going to default, well, the decision might be taken out of their hands if bond yields continue to rise. And producer prices were quite a bit higher than expected in here today. So that's pushing yields up. But what's, I think, also relevant here is that the high yield bond market has been quite steady of late, and it is now also starting to roll over. So this high yield spread chart is updated with a lag of 24 hours, and the chances are that tomorrow it's going to be popping up through the 200-day moving average following today's move. And it is important to highlight that a lot of people have been buying into the idea that there's going to be a soft landing, or that more recently there won't be any landing at all, and that there won't be any kind of economic contraction. And the primary reason for thinking that was because high yield spreads were contracting. Well, if high yield spreads start going back up again and push up through 500 basis points on a sustained basis, then the primary reason for thinking that there isn't going to be a recession will have been removed. And I think this is rather important. Now, when we look at then the dollar index was in positive territory again in here today. So it is coming up now to test the region of the 200-day moving average, and really would need a clear downward dynamic to question potential for additional upside here. And I think that we have to at least pay attention to the fact that bond yields are still trending higher. So the 10-year in the UK is testing the sequence of lower rally highs. And in Germany, then we can see that the yield is almost on the highs. What I thought was particularly interesting was that Unibail-Rodamco Westfield was one of those companies that had negative yields in 2021, and now their yield is nearly 4%. So that's a massive move in terms of the cost of financing. And it doesn't matter just whether the company is really in a really sound position or not. When we're talking about a jump in the cost of financing by 400 basis points and more, then that's something that's going to have a material impact on the company's finances. When we think about the Australian 10-year yield, it's starting to roll over. And that also, it's certainly looking different to what we've seen everywhere else. And also suggests that the inflation issue in Australia might not be quite as pressing as it is everywhere else, or at least in most other places. Now, when we think then about where is this inflation story likely to go, well, I think that we're still going to have a jump in deflationary fears. And the reason I think that is because that's what we've seen in the past when central banks have tried to reduce the size of their balance sheets. And we are now in a situation for the first time where we've got negative money supply growth. Now, this total assets of central banks chart does take a while to load, and it has certainly been flattered by the strength of the dollar over most of the last couple of months. But even here, even with the dollar perking up, it is now starting to roll over again. And this is also something to pay attention to, that if the total volume of cash that is sitting on the balance sheets of central banks is contracting, that's not great news for asset prices more often than not. Then the number of shares that are above their respective 200-day moving averages is certainly on the upper side of the long-term range. Now, we're not at a position yet where it has peaked in, or has, I think, coincided with major peaks in the past. But we've had a big rally, and a lot of that rally has been on the assumption that interest rates are going to go down soon. But I think that that is a little bit foolhardy. And the reality is that the cost of servicing government debt is problematic. And the longer interest rates stay high, then the more problematic it becomes. But that problem is dwarfed by the problem that inflation gets out of control, and then interest rates have to go way higher and for way longer to get that inflationary problem under control. And the Federal Reserve has said on several occasions that they believe that the risk of over-tightening outweighs the risk of under-tightening. What that suggests is that they want to get rates to at least 5%, and they want to hold them there for a good long period of time. And in the meantime, I think that the epicenter of risk is in commercial property, and that with large numbers of people having no intention of going back to the office, and a large proportion of the economy who's retired already, then they're going to have difficulty filling some of those towers. And it's exceptionally expensive to retrofit them into residential complexes. So I think that we have to be alert to the potential that there's a risk out there. Now, of course, as long as these indices are holding above their respective 200-day moving averages, then we should really give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But if we start to see more evidence of contraction, then that's not going to be, or if there's certainly if they start pulling back below the 200-day moving average, that's not going to be positive. Then the yield curve spread is also still trending downwards. And that's going to continue to spur interest in short covering rallies. It's, and I will reiterate that it is when this starts trending higher that is usually coincident with some very weak activity in the wider market. Now, I do want to pay attention to also what's going on in cryptocurrencies. And Ethereum, it wasn't closing on the high in here today, but it is closing back above the 200-day moving average. And this is looking at certainly more positive. Then Bitcoin was off its highs in here today, having got all the way up to test the 25,000 level. It's pausing now. That did take some of the impetus from the big move on the upside we saw yesterday from Silvergate, and it came back down again in here today. If Bitcoin can sustain a move up through 25,000, I suspect it is going to take these smaller companies with it. But that was not going to happen, or at least it did not happen in here today. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you. Okay. Welcome to another South Bank Investment Bulletin. Well, the FTSE 100 is at a new all-time high, and this is a big deal. Now, let's just remember that back in 1999, early 2000, The market peaked at 7,000 and it's now at 8,000. Now, that's a gain, but there's been an awfully long time since the FTSE 100 has been something that attracted investors who really wanted to make a lot of money. And I think if we just look at the choppiness of the pattern over the last 23 years, then the only conclusion one could really come to is that it was a trader's market, that there were multiple 1 or 2 year trends, and they some were up, some were down, and that the only way to participate was on a short to medium term basis. Now let's just contrast this. Now what I want to do here is I'm going to put up what's called a logarithmic scale chart, and I'm going to look at it monthly. But now what this does is changes the scale. So now the gains here are in terms of percentages. And then let's just zoom out. So now we can look at the big bull market that started in the early 80s. And the market went from 1,000 to 7,000 over that 17-year period. Now that was a truly spectacular rally. And then what we could really call all of this in the FTSE 100 would be what's called a secular bear market. In other words, it's a generational long process of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields in an environment where we've had a lot of growth companies doing very well. The PE on the FTSE 100 has dropped down to just less than 11 on a forward basis and has a yield of 3.5% right now. Now, I want you to just simply look at the NASDAQ 100 and on the same basis. So it has a PE of 26 and it has a yield of 0.87. So obviously, the NASDAQ over, and I will put the same kind of chart up, that's the logarithmic monthly chart, and we can then see that over this entire time frame, the NASDAQ has done substantially better. Relative to that peak in 2000, it exceeded it in 2016, and since then has gone up 3 times. And that is already accounting for the big decline that we saw in 21 and 22. So what we can then conclude is that the FTSE 100 is what's referred to as a value index. And then the other point is that if we look at the largest holdings, there are really none of these companies are technology companies. And that's not really what they are prized for. But what you do have is a big energy company, a big healthcare company, and a big bank. Then consumer company, oil company, drinks company, consumer company, a minor pharmaceuticals. So if we look at the top 10, there's none of these are technology companies. And this also is helping to support the market in the short term. But there is an additional factor. Why is the FTSE 100 doing well? Well, now I'm looking at just on a line chart. And we're looking at this in local currencies. But if I were to switch it out and then look at this on US dollar terms, well, we're nowhere near an all-time high. The time when the UK market was in fact doing best from the perspective of a foreign investor was in 2006 and 7 because the pound was strong. Then you had a massive devaluation of the pound in 2007 and 8. So from a foreign investor's perspective, the UK market dropped by more than 50% and really hasn't gone anywhere since then. So part of the reason why the FTSE 100 is popping on the upside right now is because the pound is starting to roll over. And we've had a good sized rebound over the last couple of months. And now it's closing today below the psychological 1.2 area. So this is certainly an indication that the dollar is back on the front foot. And part of the reason for that is because bond yields are still marching higher. So the 10-year yield is up now to 3.5%. And there's a lot of talk in the media that A recession has been avoided in the UK. But how long is that likely to last is, I think, a more important question. Because we know that bond yields are rising, the property market is easing, and there's a lot of uncertainty. And we also know that the wage demand growth is something that the Bank of England looks very closely at. With rising wages and strike action, then it's unlikely there's going to be strong economic growth. And the important point about the FTSE 100 is that none of those companies really rely on the UK for their income. So then they're benefiting from some of the flow as a result. Now, the index that is a better reflection of what's going on in the UK is the FTSE 250. Now, there is a caveat here, of course, in that they're mid-cap companies, so they tend to be more volatile anyway. But it pulled back aggressively between the end of 2021 and the end of 2022, and in that time dropped from 24 to about 17,000, and since then has broken the downtrend. So if this downtrend has in fact been broken, then we're going to see support being found above 19,500. Provided that remains the case, then the UK market will remain on form. Then let's look at some of these other assets, because gold prices have predictably started to roll over. As long as the dollar is strong, then we're going to be in a corrective phase for gold. And it is coming back down now into the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is a potential area of support. Then we should also pay attention to what's happening with oil. So oil prices are a little weaker today, but the bigger picture here is that they continue to steady around the $80 area. And I do apologize for how long this chart is taking to load, but we can very clearly see that the price at the moment is locked in a tight range between the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. So it's currently pulling back from the upper side of that range. There is still a downtrend in evidence since the peak in 2022. And then we have support in the region of the upper side of this longer term range. So there's a big point of indecision here. On the one hand, we have OPEC and Russia cutting back on supply, which supports prices. On the other hand, we have a slowing global economy which saps demand. So at the moment, this range tells us that supply and demand are in equilibrium. But a breakout either above 90 or below 80 would catalyze a move. Now, if oil prices remain steady, then it would be reasonable to anticipate that the global economy is going to be reasonably healthy. On the other hand, if oil prices pull back from here, it would be an indication that global growth is slowing down in a more meaningful way. Now, ultimately, the lower oil prices go, that helps to encourage economic activity, but it's usually when prices are a lot lower than they are today, and $80 is still reasonably expensive for oil. Now, when then let's think about Bitcoin, because we've had a good sized rally over the last 3 days, and the price got right back up to test the 25,000 level, and that's a new high. So it's the highest level that Bitcoin has traded out to since June. Now, it didn't hold at all today, but the big picture here is that Bitcoin has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it is in the process of confirming support in the region of the peak from back in 2017, and it's stabilizing above the 20,000 level. So we might get some additional consolidation. But then the other big thing to bear in mind is that the next halving for Bitcoin will be in April of 2024. Now, the last halving was in 2020. So let's zoom in then and look at what happened before that. So we had the halving around May. The price started rallying 14 months before that, had a good sized rally, and took it up to break this downtrend. Then we had a period of weakness, and the price pulled back rather violently. But then, coming into the halving, which reduces the reward for minting a new block, then prices started to recover. And we saw then a very similar condition in 2016. So prices started to rebound all the way at the beginning of 2015 and had a good sized rally. And then we had a period of boring weakness. And then it was after the halving that prices really accelerated higher. So it is a time to be start thinking about cryptocurrencies again, even if we're not quite yet at the halving. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.
Jefferson.